There we go.
Yo, yo.
What's up?
Let's get it.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the B-Team Podcast. I am Josh, and I am joined by Mr. Brendan Krause.
Hello.
We are here to talk about
Godzilla Minus One.
So, for anyone who was unsure, Minus One refers to the economy of Tokyo, is what my understanding is. The explanation that I saw was after the bombing, they were at zero, and then due to Godzilla, they are now at minus one.
Yeah, from my understanding, that's basically it.
So let's jump right into it. What were your thoughts?
Godzilla Minus One. Going in, I was very hopeful. You know, it's one of two actual, you know, Japanese Godzilla films we've gotten in 20 years. And man, I really, really liked it. Maybe even loved it, but I have to see it a second time. I thought this was such a great way to celebrate. It's Godzilla's 70th anniversary this year. And, you know, this was the film they had been making for it. And I think it was such a great just tribute to the franchise. And, yeah, I thought it was very, very good.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I immensely enjoyed it. Would say I loved it. I did not really know what to expect because we had covered Shin Godzilla and we did the other Shin movies. And I thought that this was going to be like a sequel. Actually, what I thought it was going to be if Shin Godzilla was the 2003 Texas Chainsaw Massacre, this was going to be the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the beginning. And it was going to be like a prequel lead up to Shin Godzilla. I was very wrong.
Yeah, I mean, just aside from knowing it's a fresh continuity, didn't really know what to expect going in. And yeah, I mean, it seems to be getting high praise from pretty much everywhere. I saw Hideki Anno, who directed Shin Godzilla, was like, holy crap, this movie was amazing. Gareth Edwards, who kicked off the legendary Godzilla movie, said he thinks it might be his favorite Godzilla movie I saw. I mean, I've seen pretty much every single person who's into the franchise likes it. Yeah.
I mean, this was definitely headed towards being my number one. A couple things knocked it out for me, and we'll talk about that because I know we have a difference of opinion there. So I didn't know much about it. I basically avoided the trailers. Needs to be said, this was a $15 million budget. There is a couple of shots where he's like walking in the city where it's a little bit wonky, but I loved it because it was like a campy throwback. I was second guessing, like, is any of this a guy in a suit? And apparently none of it was. But the visuals are incredible. And on $15 million, so like you hold this up against especially like the past year of the MCU and just the visual effects and nightmares that have become memes and, you know, things like Flash and holy shit, like whatever they did to make the visuals in this movie, like just do that across the board.
Yeah. It was done by Takashi Yamazaki, who's he did everything. He wrote, directed, and was the lead visual effects supervisor. And I had never heard of him before this, but he's considered one of the like kind of one of the like leading figures of Japanese cinema. I guess he's won the Japanese equivalent of the Oscars, six Academy Awards. You know, he's like a very like well respected guy.
Yeah, I was looking him up, and he's basically like the Japanese equivalent of like Denis Villeneuve, And, you know, I haven't seen any of his other movies, but everybody who was praising this one was talking about his 2013 movie, The Eternal Zero, which apparently follows a very similar plot minus the Godzilla portion. So I'm interested in checking that one out.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to see some of his other stuff, and we'll definitely see whatever he does next.
So before we jump into the plot, I'm going to give you my biggest negative, and let's see if we're on the same page here. Legendary, whether you love or hate those movies, has adapted their own version of what I would call Godzilla's like trademark screech and roar. It's a little bit more, I guess, realistic, and then it turns into kind of like a drawn out version of the classic sound.
Yeah, pretty much.
That is not present in this movie. He's kind of just got like a menacing but fairly generic roar. There is a like hint of an echo of the original sound, but it's at the very, very end. And it does not seem like you could hear the Godzilla thing anywhere. Like, oh, that's Godzilla. This is definitely its own thing.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'm not sure I'd say it's my biggest negative, but I'd agree. I found it, like, as you said that, I was like, God, I can't remember what his roar sounded like in this movie, and I only saw it 2 days ago. I'm of the opinion that, you know, obviously, you know, change what you want in the movies, but, like, I feel like the roar should, like, basically always be the same. It's just that iconic. Like, the one thing I loved about Shin Godzilla was that they used literally every single original sound from the 54 movie without changing, like, them at all.
Mm-hmm.
I know Hideaki Anno, who directed it, was adamant that we were going to use all the original sounds. They did use a lot of the original, like, musical scores in this one, which I did like.
Yeah.
The main Godzilla theme is just so iconic. How can you not have it? I mean, my biggest negative would probably be more something related to the human side.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I have a few writing negatives as well, but as far as like the human plot, I mean, you know, we're both Godzilla fans. We know that the brunt of these movies is typically like the human plot, and the monsters are just kind of there in the background. They show up from time to time. I thought this was one of the best, if not the best, right before the original.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see like a chart of like Godzilla's screen time, because I mean, yeah, like if you look at the original, Godzilla's actually not in the movie that much.
Mm-hmm.
I'd imagine this one's got to be up there for at least amount of time Godzilla's like actually on screen.
Cause I would guess across all iterations of Godzilla, probably like 18 to 24 minutes, if that.
Yeah, because there are some parts in the movie I'm like, wow, we have not seen him in a while. I wonder when he's going to show up. Human plot was great, minus one thing that really it was kind of not working for me, but like to the point of I'm just kind of whatever on it. But then like the way it ends, I'm like, oh, I really wish they hadn't done that.
Well, so let's jump into the plot, and you can lead us on this one, because I'm sure you remember everybody's names, and I just remember the main guy.
Yeah, so the movie takes place at the end of the Second World War, and the main guy's named, I think it's pronounced Koichi?
Yep.
I think that's how you pronounce it. He's a fighter pilot in the Japanese Navy, and he lands back on his, like, kind of, I don't know what you would call it, forward operating base. Because his plane's damaged, quote unquote. And what you learn is that he was actually supposed to be a kamikaze pilot.
Right.
But he basically just chickened out and didn't do it. He couldn't bring himself to do it. And while he's on the island, Godzilla attacks. And when I say Godzilla attacks, Godzilla at this point is like basically the size of like, imagine like a T-Rex from Jurassic Park.
Exactly.
Like,
I think it's supposed to be Odo Island.
Yes, it was Odo Island. It kills everyone except for him and one of the mechanics who, and this same mechanic had criticized him because he's like, dude, there's nothing wrong with your plane. What are you doing here? Fast forward 2 years. He's living in Tokyo post-war. You see it's very, you know, damaged and destroyed. And throughout basically the whole movie, he's got, you know, massive survivor's guilt. And he has this, how would I describe it? A relationship with this girl named Noriko. And she has an adopted child. And they're like, they're together, but they're not married, which a lot of people like assume throughout the movie that they are. Mm-hmm. And like, he's basically the father to her child. But like, whenever early on, when the kid calls her dad, he's like, I'm not your dad. And you're kind of just seeing them, you know, living life. He becomes a minesweeper, destroying mines off the coast of Japan. And he's making like good money doing that because it's a dangerous job. And that's where you kind of meet like, I'd say like the B and C characters, like his crew. And they finally come back into contact with Godzilla because their boat is sent to like blow up this ship, but it's really just a diversion by the Japanese government to like try to stop Godzilla. Mm-hmm. They're basically trying to just sacrifice them. And they managed to get away while also like freaking blowing up Godzilla's head. Oh my God.
That was fucking awesome. So there's, I don't know if it's a it's in the trailer, but there's like a clip going around that shows like some of the scene. And I mean, visually it looks awesome. You see Godzilla like stalking their boat, but like the actual scene as it plays out, I mean, they basically drop one of these giant mines like right in his mouth and it blows off his jaw. And I remember like my theater was just like, holy shit.
I was thinking like, oh, okay, so there's like multiple Godzillas and they just
That's
like
what
killed
I
this
thought,
one.
Because, you know, there is sometimes a plot line of, oh, there's like a baby Godzilla and then you piss it off and the big one comes kind of like Gorgo. But that
I
was
really
not
thinking,
the case here.
Yeah, I was thinking it was going to be like the Millennium movies where there's just multiple Godzillas. Mm-hmm. But then, no, his head just like, and it's not even like a slow regeneration either. It like almost instantly like just heals back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like Godzilla has become perfect cell. Like they blow off parts of his body and it just instantly comes back.
Then there's a sixth scene where Godzilla like takes out a Japanese cruiser. And I should mention you get to see the famous, you know, Bikini Atoll nuclear test by the U.S. And, you know, that's what it's implied, you know, makes Godzilla like a just giant monster that, you know, people know.
Yeah.
And basically the whole crux of the movie is that Godzilla's, you know, planning to come back and destroy Tokyo, they think. But the Japanese government basically can't do anything. And I do like how this movie uses like real historical figures, and apparently General Douglas MacArthur in the Godzilla universe refuses to send help to Japan because it'll escalate tensions with the Soviet Union, so they won't send them any help. I just love the idea of Douglas MacArthur like being like, "We can't take on Godzilla, guys. It's too much." So they devise a quirky plan to kill Godzilla where they're going to sink him and then raise him back up really fast with balloons to like make him like explode basically.
Well, basically they wanted to give him like the bends. But first the plan was, oh, we can just sink him and he'll drown. And then they're like, no, you know, Godzilla is a reptile. He can breathe water. That's not going to do anything. So like, they didn't really know what was going to happen. And I mean, it's a little bit like, kind of Jaws with the barrels, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, because they wanted to bring him the guy says, you know, when you we'll lower him but we'll raise him fast enough to where he has to decompress and he'll like literally explode from the decompression is the idea, which is one of the just in a movie that's serious one of the just quackiest Godzilla kill plans I've ever seen, but I did love it. And, you know, eventually they do manage to bring God, you know, the plan kind of works, but Godzilla's not quite dead yet. And Koichi, during the entire, like, final act of the movie, is, like, in some, like experimental Japanese plane from World War II that's kind of loaded to explode. And when you think he's gonna like go out and kill himself, like by finally doing like a kamikaze run, he ejects, lands back home safely, and I forgot to mention, Godzilla does make landfall once in this movie in Tokyo, and just absolutely destroys like the province they live in. I can't remember what it's called.
Ginza,
yes. He does his atomic breath, which one of the coolest ones I've ever seen.
I mean, it's like a straight, like almost like a Death Star beam. I mean, it's full on laser, and it produces like a nuclear shockwave. It's like a Power Rangers explosion. This levels the city.
And it's implied that like Noriko died in the explosion, but after the days when they've killed Godzilla, he finds out from his neighbor that he gets some telegram, and he takes Nariko's and his kids to the hospital, and she's alive. But it's implied it really reminded me of the Shin Godzilla almost ending with the things coming out of the tail where she's got some radiation growing in her.
Mm-hmm.
You see it very, very briefly, and then shocker, Godzilla's regenerating underwater.
Yeah.
And that's more or less the movie.
So my negatives there are, thematically, I had an issue with it because, I thought this movie was just going to be a dark, depressing downer the whole way through, and I was on board. They set up the whole thing with the Survivors Guild. He's finally going to have his heroic moment. I thought that she did end up dying. So my question there, because, I don't know enough about Japanese culture, but I do know, film culture. Do they have test screenings? Because the whole telegram, it all just felt like a rewrite, reshoot, where, I think originally she died, and audiences were like, nope, we don't like that. So, magically, here's the neighbor with the telegram, and then, nope, she's alive.
I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. If I had to guess, I would have guessed Toho would want, a more happy ending, if I just had to guess. But honestly, my negative, Noriko, I probably would have just not had her in the movie, honestly.
She didn't really do much at all.
Everything her and the daughter contributed, I felt was so half-baked and almost an afterthought. I thought you really had enough with just Koichi being a, having this survivor's guilt of a, because one of the best scenes in the movie is very early on. He returns to Tokyo after the war is over, and he sees his parents' house is destroyed, and his neighbor comes up to him and is like, wait, how are you alive? Weren't you a kamikaze fighter? And she starts screaming and hitting him because her kids died, and she's like, if you would just sacrifice yourself, we would have won the war.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was such a great setup for his whole survivor's guilt, thinking, it's my fault that my people are going through this awful, post-war struggles. And but the whole Noriko thing, I feel didn't really add on to that in any meaningful way.
So my takeaway from that, and so tell me if you're with me on this, because, it's no secret that the majority of our popular movies for, let's say, the last 5 to 8 years have been just dominated by the mostly unearned girl boss, put the women in it and make them the focus of everything, which is fine when it works and it services the plot. But these characters were so just there, not even as damsels in distress, but basically just props, that it was such a whiplash to me based on what we've just been exposed to for the past decade. But I was like, wow, you really, really noticed they did not contribute to this movie.
Yeah, well, I thought, there's really only two female, three if you count the daughter, but I don't really count her.
Yeah.
Adult female characters, it's just really Noriko and his neighbor. The neighbor, I didn't mind. In fact, I thought she added quite a bit to the movie by chastising him mm-hmm. at the beginning of it. But Noriko, I just she didn't really add much. I thought, if she had just died, that would be okay, whatever. But her being alive at the end, I was she should have probably stayed dead, honestly. I feel like that would hit way more.
Yeah.
If she, like, actually was dead. And I feel like that could have been a good ending where, you know, he feels like he's finally, like, saved Japan. He's, like, kind of come to terms, you know, peace with himself. He's got, you know, their daughter. And he lives on, you know, in, like, her memory. Because I see some people saying, oh, he should have died. Honestly, I was fine with him surviving. I really wish they had kept her dead. I feel like that would have made the movie better. And then just, not as big a negative, just some of the, you know, character drama I thought was a little on the nose at times, but yeah, overall though, this is one of the best, like, human stories in a Godzilla movie, definitely.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, so thematically, you know, my issues were, it was going dark, it was setting up all these beats that were going to pay off one way or the other, and then it pulled two of the movies I hate the most in, like, the last 15, 20 years, Dark Knight Rises and The Last Jedi. And I was just like, oh, he fixed the autopilot, and, you know, here's Finn going on his run to blow up the cannon, and here comes Rose out of nowhere. And there wasn't even a Rose, but, you know, we think he died, and then, no, he's fine. And then just the way that, like, Godzilla immediately regenerated, I was like, you know, was that an afterthought? Was that, like, a reshoot? Because
that I'd be willing to bet was, like, day one. Like, these days, he's never going to – Godzilla will never die, you know? The TLJ one, I'm assuming you mean, like, her surviving, like, being alive?
Right? Not even him, sir, but, like, when Finn goes on, like, the, you know, the run on the salt planet and he's going to kamikaze and then she knocks him out of the way. I mean, obviously nobody knocked him out of the way, but it just, you know, they subverted our expectations and, oh, he's still alive.
Yeah, no, I can understand why it doesn't work. For me, I do like that, because unlike Dark Knight, because in Dark Knight Rises, it's Bruce Wayne who, like, fixed it, the autopilot.
Yeah.
Here, it was a mechanic, but it wasn't just, like, some random mechanic.
It was the one that
survived. It was the mechanic from Odo Island who, like, right. said, who, like, he, because at first was criticizing him for not killing himself.
Right.
And I did like how it comes around to where he realizes himself, like, you know, blindly, like, just blowing up, driving your plane and killing yourself isn't going to win us anything, you know. Living on is what will keep Japan going. I did like that. And I also really like the side story where they wouldn't let the youngest member of their minesweeping crew go out, and they're like, hey, kid, you're the future, you know, stay home.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. Like, I mean, I like her line of, you know, now is your war ended, but, I mean, it's definitely a little on the nose.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned, you know, it reminded you of TLJ. When all the civilian ships show up, I won't lie, that kind of did remind me of Rise of Skywalker, but granted, here I thought it was done, like, well.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, ultimately, you know, if you look at the original movie, you know, Godzilla's meant to represent, you know, the bomb, whatever, and it's Japan overcoming it. And here, it's the same thing, essentially. This one, Minus One, and Shin Godzilla are probably the three best ever, like, really, like, going for that, this idea of, like, Japan is the one who has to overcome this and does.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and one other negative, honestly, I thought it's not bad, but very middle of the road on Godzilla's, like, actual design on this one. For me, Millennium era will always be my favorite. That's how I prefer my Godzilla look personally. For those who don't know, Millennium era is basically the final, like, 2000s movies. That's how I felt like I didn't really like when he atomic breaths, like, the scales grow.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird. Like, yeah. It was only the very first time, and then they stayed, that would have been okay, but, like, they kind of, like, go up.
It does
down.
It every time, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing I'd be curious about, we both saw us in a theater. Your theater was relatively full, right?
My theater was full, yeah.
Yeah, my theater, not sold out, but pretty close to it, which if you had asked me at the beginning of this year, the new Godzilla Minus One's coming out, when you see it opening night, how many people will be there? I would have said, like, oh, probably 10, which was a welcome surprise. Because when I saw Shin Godzilla opening weekend, I mean...
Empty theater,
which, you know, I don't know about you, but for this movie, I have actually seen marketing, like, it being advertised in places. I mean, not like obviously like a comic book movie, but like
right.
I have seen like ads for it. Whereas I remember when Shin Godzilla came out, I saw
nothing.
Literally zero ads.
Yeah, I remember like and, one like Fathom Events thing, and that was it. And you had to be in a movie for it.
Yeah, and this is like, you know, it's being released like normally, and I looked up the box office. It's made, you know, so far $25 million.
Oh yeah, no, it'll definitely end up making money. So what's interesting to me, because, you know, we live in the never-ending hellscape of geek culture and niche franchises are fun and popular, even though, like, people don't actually see them or do anything with them. So this got, like, a ton of coverage. I mean, I remember saying on the Shin Godzilla thing, I was like, oh, I didn't even know this was coming out. Well, right after we did that, there was, like, a marketing blitz and... It wasn't even leaks. It was just basically like, you know, the hype sites reporting things. And I saw a couple of things. And I mean, out of all the movies I've seen where I had quote unquote fake spoilers, this one got me the most. And I was so fucking nervous because the trailer or a clip leaked with the, you know, the first original form Godzilla before he mutates. So everybody was like, oh, there's going to be two Godzillas. There's, you know, a baby Godzilla. And I was like, all right, well, if we're doing that, there's going to be other monsters. And I don't know where it came from, but there's still articles going around being like, you know, is Anguirus in this movie? I always hated Anguirus. And, you know, he sucks. But I
never want to fight, but we love him.
I was so worried, like, around the time that he's doing the beam in Tokyo and we're setting up for like this big ending. I'm like, okay, so we've got MacArthur doesn't want to piss off the Russians. I'm like, tell me he's going to like tag in Kong and they're going to set up some shit there. And I'm like, when the hell is Anguirus going to show up? Is this going to be like some big third act thing where he's the hero or Godzilla like suddenly like, you know, decides to help out? And when I finally realized like this is not happening, I was so relieved because I was like, you know, yeah, I want to see that movie too, but like not in the tone,
not in the pacing of this one,
you know?
Yeah, no, that would have been, if they had introduced another monster in the third act, that would have maybe even ruined the movie for me, honestly, like with just the way it was going. I am curious. It seems, you know, Toho is, before, you know, they had their eras, you know, Showa era, Millennium era, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
The current era, which is called, I think, the Riri era,
mm-hmm.
So far it's all been standalones. Do you think they should do a sequel to this, or the next one should be just another standalone?
So I think it's going to depend on two things, because I found out another fact that just absolutely blew my fucking mind. I remember when we saw Kong versus Godzilla, and neither one of us were big on it. And I love the, you know, King of the Monsters from 2019. It was definitely a COVID movie. It was a pandemic release. Apparently, even though it didn't really do anything by the time we had reviewed it, it did fucking buckets on streaming, on rentals, on, you know, VOD. This movie made a ton of money, got a ton of views, and for the second time this year, I didn't even know they greenlit a sequel to that. So
yeah, based Godzilla on, Kong, the new empire, yeah.
Yeah, so based on how much money this ends up doing, which it looks like, you know, it's going to run away this weekend because everything else is just not getting any traction, and I think, like, Wonka's a few weeks out if that's going to have any draw to begin with. So let's say this thing ends up doing, like, 50 to 75 million. They would absolutely do a sequel. If this thing does like 100 or something insane, like they'll greenlight that shit tomorrow. But I think they're also looking at the American side to see what that movie does, because now apparently there's an audience for those.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see, because
like I remember doing that podcast, we were all like, you know, yeah, it was fun and it was stupid, but like you know, MonsterVerse is obviously dead. We're not going to see another one. And now it's like, nope, we're doing another one. Space Godzilla.
Yeah, no, I'm shocked. Godzilla, there is a international, I mean, seems everywhere, always a decent audience for it, because I just looked it up. Shin Godzilla, you know, basically without America, since, you know, they didn't market it in this country, made $78 million, the U.S., by the end of its run, which I am surprised it made that much money. No U.S., considering no U.S. at all.
Yeah.
Apparently it did. I'm looking right now. It did. Wow. It did very, very well in Japan. But yeah. Godzilla, there is, I think they've now finally realized, you know, whether it's made by America or Japan, there is a market for it here in the States.
I think it goes beyond that. I'm going to make a very, very controversial statement, but one that I believe I can sadly back up with evidence. Because I remember a time in like the late 80s, early 90s, when you just had like all these like pop culture things. You had King Kong, you had Godzilla, you had Superman. Nothing was more popular than Superman. Obviously, Batman, the Avengers have just eclipsed everybody except for maybe Spider-Man. They made him an Avenger now too, as evidenced by the currently ongoing, and it's fun, but man, is the dialogue awful, Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong. When you're going to do a home field America movie and you put King Kong in it, he's going to get the win. When you have Superman versus Godzilla, Superman is going to get the win. Godzilla kicked the fucking shit out of him. We live in a world where in the mainstream general audience, as of right now, Godzilla is more popular than Superman.
I mean, I'd agree with that. I mean, you know, when it comes to like pop culture in America versus Japan, I mean, you know, America superheroes are what historically reigns supreme, but aside from Spider-Man and Batman, they're all down bad for the most part. Whereas it feels like Japan has, they just know how to keep it rolling over there, with all their legacy franchises. You know, like the Shin movies were all mostly great, I thought. They just know how to like keep these things fresh and relevant, whereas I'd argue America with its superheroes does not.
Yeah,
for the most part. And also, I honestly don't know. I've talked to Justin about this. I honestly don't know where you line up. I think since last year, I think, you know, the 2010s were largely not a great decade for movies compared to, like, you know, what I would consider the great decades, like the 70s, 90s, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it was due to audience tastes, where it's like we just saw comic book movies specifically have such a unprecedented like stranglehold over theaters that we'd never seen before. COVID seems to have kind of ended that. And I feel like audiences since 2020 are slowly, we are nowhere near back to normal. I think I'll just say this, from 2012 to 2018, I'd argue mainstream audiences' tastes got worse. For the most part, I would say since 2022, slowly, audience tastes have been getting better. We have seen movies that, if they had come out in 2017, would have made $1 billion, but they come out today and not just bomb, but people that see them don't like them. Your Flashes, your Dialysis of Destiny, I don't even know what else. I mean, God, there are so many bombs this year. Every Marvel movie, basically, these days. Every DC movie. And there's that tweet I love that went viral where a guy was like, I can't think of a bigger, like, signifier of the current cultural shift happening among American audiences than this. And it was a picture of a Blue Beetle. Who remembers that movie, first of all?
Mm-hmm.
When it came out, it was the same weekend as the 20th anniversary 4K re-release of Old Boy in theaters, and it was like two theaters in New York City showing it at the same time. IMAX Blue Beetle, like 20 seats sold, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Regular theater, like Old Boy, a movie which is what, 20 years old, had like 80 seats sold.
Yep.
I think movies like, you know, I feel like people are starting to slowly appreciate actual like unique filmmaking in movies compared to like the slop of franchises where like even something I didn't like Barbie, you know, not a fan of the movie, but it felt like, to me at least, a real movie with like an actual like personality about it. Like that made like it's I'm pretty sure it's in the top like 10 highest grossing movies ever. Mm-hmm. Oppenheimer, the other side of that coin. I still cannot believe that movie is like just shy of $1 billion, considering it's a 3-hour historical drama that's basically people talking the entire time. So I feel like Godzilla Minus One is kind of, aside from the fact that it's a good movie, gain a boost from like, I just think people's tastes are slowly getting better, personally.
I mean, I think it was a combination of COVID, of, you know, the writing and direction and, you know, agenda and all that. And I really put the blame on Multiverse. I think Multiverse is the bridge too far for normies. It was fun for No Way Home. Everybody got to see the Spider-Mans that they all followed, some they grew up with. That was the end of that story. But then every movie starts doing multiverse and time travel, and they're bringing back dead characters, and they're going in cosmic, and people don't know what the hell is going on. And the general public was like, I don't care anymore. I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that to a point. But I feel like with a lot of multiverse, they try to go the nostalgia route. And aside from No Way Home, which where it obviously worked big time, it for the most part is like really not working anymore when these franchises try it. I mean, Flash was just, I mean, they tried to No Way Home the shit out of that movie, and oh my god, did it bomb.
Yeah.
I still suspect Deadpool 3, I'm not saying it bombs, but I don't think it'll be a $1 billion hit like everyone's saying it will be.
I think it depends on what actually happens in the movie and what kind of movie it ends up being, because I mean, I think that's going to be the last of what I'm calling the returners, which is like basically people who checked out with Endgame and they've kind of given up on the MCU. They came back for things like Guardians 3, you know, they came back maybe for the last Ant-Man, and this is going to be the last one that'll bring them back because it has any continuing storylines they remotely care about.
Yeah. No, that's definitely part of it. I just think, again, we got a long way to go, but I feel like people are starting to finally, once again, fall in love with like an actual, like real filmmaking and a vision behind a movie. And on the blockbuster side, I point to like The Flash, Indiana Jones 5, The Marvels versus Top Gun, Maverick, and Avatar 2. Again, even if someone hates Top Gun and Avatar 2, that's fine. But like, I can't see how someone can deny that like the filmmaking and craft in those movies is like a million times above like something like, I don't know, The Marvels or The Flash, you know? And I feel like so many people coming out of Avatar 2, like, were just like, wow, the filmmaking in that movie was just incredible. James Cameron's so good, you know? I feel like people are slowly starting to fall in love with that again, which I think is better for movies personally. I mean, that's, you know, for me, you know, what do I like most in a movie personally? It's good filmmaking above anything else personally.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah. And I'd say this, you know, Godzilla Minus One falls into that, you know, Takashi Yamazaki is a clearly very talented filmmaker. This movie, it has a personality. It doesn't feel like, you know, some MCU factory line slop that we're so used to in American blockbusters these days, you know?
Definitely.
And yeah.
All right.
I would recommend this movie to, I think, basically everyone. I feel like everyone can get enjoyment out of it, you know.
Oh no, I'm with you there. You know, for anyone who hasn't realized, it is absolutely spoken Japanese with English subtitles. Not a dub as of yet. I'm sure there will be eventually, but it is worth seeing in theaters.
Yep. Definitely.
So. All right, man. This was fun. And I Oh, there's a movie I have to go watch that just came out. So I will catch you later.
Oh, can we know what movie?
Well, it is streaming exclusively on Daily Wire Plus.
Oh, okay. Well, if there's a review for that, I will definitely be tuning in, let me tell you.
I mean, you and me, maybe Justin, probably the only ones that would end up watching it. So let me know.
Yeah.
So on that note.
All right.
All right, man.
Peace.